Pro-Palestine and pro-Hamas protesters have a crippling hold currently on the Democratic Party. However, 7 out of 10 members of the American Jewish population also vote Democrat. But the current administration has waffled on their support for Israel. So what does the current policy of the Biden-Harris administration mean for the support of the Jewish people in the 2024 U.S. presidential election? I'm Skynell Hughes, and this is Perspective.
President Biden and I are working to end this war such that Israel is secure, the hostages are released, the suffering in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination.
That was Democrat presidential nominee Kamala Harris speaking some very tough words, trying to play both sides of the Israel-Hamas war. However, the Biden-Harris policy regarding the Middle East has been seen as confusing, as the administration has done everything it can to not choose a side. Now, Kamala Harris even skipped Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's speech before Congress. All of this led to a massive undecided movement during the primaries, and many delegates even responding present instead of for Harris during the roll call. However, you know, actions may speak louder than words. In Harris's case, when the DNC allowed the Israeli parents of an American hostage of Hamas taken on October 7th to give a speech, Palestinian protesters began burning flags and turning violent outside. Women Muslim for Harris have actually rescinded their endorsement of Kamala Harris due to the Chicago Convention not then giving a chance for a Palestinian speaker. And on the final night, a Jewish rabbi even closed out the Democratic National Convention by delivering the benediction prayer and endorsing Kamala Harris.
Light, or combined with freedom, Chayrut, inspired by Vice President Kamala Harris's vision for America.
Now, Donald Trump, on the other hand, has made his position on Israel very clear.
I've done more for Israel by far than any other president, not even close. And with the historic Abraham Accords, as you know, we created peace in the Middle East. By contrast, Kamala Harris stabbed Israel in the back in its great hour of need. She doesn't like Jewish people. She doesn't like Israel. That's the way it is, and that's the way it's always going to be. She's not going to change.
There are large Jewish donors on both sides of the aisle. And in 2020, this contributed to a combined total of $80 million in political contributions. However, in 2016, according to the Jerusalem Post, U.S. Jews contributed more than 50% of all the donations to the Democratic Party. But do dollars equal control within a political party in 2024? And how is the current conflict in the Middle East affecting the presidential campaigns? Well, I want to discuss this with our panel, Alan Grayson, former Florida congressman, Andrew Langer, host, Andrew Langer Show, and president of the Liberty Institute, and Autry J. Pruitt, chairman of New Journey PAC. Thank you so much for joining me on this very sensitive topic, but I think one very important, as I think there needs to be some real lines established as to what is going on here. And obviously, I'm going to start with you, Alan Grayson, congressman. You know, does the majority in the Jewish faith support the Democratic Party? And does this include, do you think, all the various sectors of Judaism?
The majority does. The polling is consistent on 70-30, as you described at the beginning of the show. That has been consistent for many, many years, no matter what happens in Israel and in the Middle East. And I think it's likely to remain true. Jews who are Reform and even conservative skew very heavily to the Democratic Party. And Jews who are Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox tend to skew in the other direction. The reason for that is very simply that the Judaism is a moral religion, and the principle of tikkun olam, heal the world, corresponds to much of the Democratic platform.
So I have to look to you, Andrew, because what issues do you think that the Democrats support the most to warrant this overwhelming support, probably of the majority of any Democrat or of any demographic?
I think Congressman Grayson is right insofar as the translation of tikkun olam into support for the Democratic Party, right? You have to sort of understand where this comes from in terms of the sort of the it's interesting, right? Because tikkun olam is a moral principle, but it's a moral principle in a religious environment which has grown increasingly away from actual religiosity over the last, I'm going to say not even half century, but 75 years or so. You know, maybe even starting in the latter part of the 19th century with the creation of the Society for Ethical Culture, with Jews who wanted to engage in the ethical tenets of Judaism without dealing with the religious aspects of it, as someone who came out of an ethical humanist tradition in high school. And so you have sort of those non-religious ethical adherents who sort of look at what the traditional progressive wing of the Democratic Party have done, and they go there. But then when you look a little bit further, things have changed. And some of it has to do with the rise of the pro-Palestinian movement within the Democratic constituencies. And some of it has to do with, virulent anti-Semitism in some corners of the Democratic Party. And some of it just has to do with general policy. Real quick, I'm sorry, it seems like I'm filibustering. I've had conversations with Reform Jews who are not particularly religious, but who have been traditional Democratic constituents over the last 30 years plus, who are now really raising questions. I had a conversation with a high school classmate who was like, I see what Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are doing, and I don't want to go there.
Okay, well, Autry, I want to get you to say, but real quick, I do want to define for our audience real quick, and I think probably I'm going to throw this to you, Congressman. Is there a difference between what those of the Jewish faith believe and Zionists, and is it fair to kind of group all of them under the same broad umbrella?
Well, clearly, what the Jewish faith is a religion, and what Zionism is an ideology applied to a particular place on planet Earth. So the Venn diagram sort of speaks for itself, if you will. I think that most Jews are Zionists. I think that almost all Zionists are Jews, but it's not the same as to say that one is the same as the other. For instance, the ultra-Orthodox, the very most religious Jews of all, are clearly not Zionists. They're the ones who are saying that they need to stay off the Temple Mount and not pray in East Jerusalem and in the Israeli part of Jerusalem, and let the let people be separate from each other. So it's a very, very complicated situation. Doesn't resolve itself into a simple set of words or one sentence. But it is true that almost all Jews believe that the land of Israel should be and is Jewish.
Autry, from a political standpoint, does the issue and the conflict that's going on right now in Israel, is that a subject you think is being over-politicized or should be politicized more by each political party? And are Democrats trying to ignore it or try to push it aside while Republicans are trying to capitalize it?
Well, I think it's an issue that must be talked about by both political entities. I think the current state of Israel and the relationship with Israel is probably the first, if not the first issue in U.S. foreign policy that we have to deal with. I think with regards to the Democratic Party, this is interesting. If I remember my statistics correctly, the Biden administration actually has given more and done more for Israel overall in the Trump administration. Now, their rhetoric has not matched it. What Harris has said has not matched it, because I think she's actually farther to the left on Biden's issue. But in a pure statistical analysis of the data, I believe Biden and Harris have pushed more, both from the U.S. directly and through pressure on partners, into Israel than did Trump. But that is not something that the Democrats, obviously with their left base, want to spell out. So they have to ride this pony very, very carefully. And if the Republicans are smart, they would really laser in on Harris's left base rhetoric. They would focus in on that left base rhetoric very, very intentionally. I think they're smart, and they could begin to peel away some of the older Jewish vote. What I'm seeing, I'm not Jewish, obviously. I know a lot of Jews, but I deal a lot with that data. What I am seeing is that you're seeing some of the traditional Clinton-style Jewish vote, if not jump for Trump, peel away from Biden and Harris. And the Republicans could be very effective if they know how to do that. I don't know if Donald Trump, I'm a Trump supporter, I have been, but I just don't know if he has the heft to be able to make that kind of argument, or if his team does.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the actions and the words, because, Andrew, do you agree with that? When you look at it, that Democrats might have actually done more for Israel, per se, but they don't want to admit it. They don't want it to be out there publicly. And at some point, will they be held accountable for those words if they're really not true Israel, or if they're more pro-Israel than even the Republicans are?
Well, it always depends on how you measure done more, right? I mean, there is the dollar version of it, which I would wonder how much of that aid has been given since the October attacks and how much was before, right? Because obviously, if you're helping to fund an effort in which Israel is having to fight a war, you know, in defense of its own sovereignty, that sort of lends itself to this in an area in which this didn't happen under the Trump administration, because the Trump administration was engaging in sort of the substantive foreign policy in a way that this administration's schizophrenic approach has essentially given comfort and aid to folks who would both attack Israel and attack other sort of American interests abroad, right? So is it about funding and aid monetarily, or is it about, you know, the Abraham Accords and moving the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem? Again, that all depends on how you look at it. But the question really is, and I think to the point that was made, this is an election that is going to come down to moving small groups of voters from column A to column B. And if you can peel off X percentage of voters from that 70% of the Jewish Democratic voters, then we're talking about things. It changes the calculus going into September, October, and November.
And you're right. It does about small little groups this time when you're talking about percentage points. Alan, do you feel
but
like
there's one little difference in that?
What, Audrey? What?
Because it's not just small groups; it's small groups in the right states. If you peel them off in New York and California, you know, you got to peel them off in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin.
In individual states,
so
it's not just
one. I agree
one
with them, but it's
good point.
Yeah, if they've moved them in New York and California.
Doesn't matter. You already know where you're going with that one.
Yeah.
Well, to that point, one of the reasons that they were looking at Governor Josh Shapiro, and this is to Alan, do you feel like Kamala Harris' pick of Governor Tim Walz over Josh Shapiro had anything to do with the fact that Governor Shapiro is Jewish, and was that a mistake in not going for Shapiro, not only because he's from a very important state, but it would also probably secure that Jewish base behind him?
No, I think that talk is vastly overblown, just like the criticism of the administration is vastly overblown. Tony Blinken is actually the one who's calling the shots, in my opinion, based upon my prior observation. He has had a very consistent policy, not a schizophrenic policy at all. One could always say that if you picked a Jewish person, it might have some impact on the Jewish vote, but I don't think that could possibly be what was foremost in Kamala Harris's mind. She had 50 governors to choose from, not just two. And I think that she picked a good one. I know Walz. I think he's a fantastic choice. He's a decent human being, and that makes him a dramatic contrast to Donald Trump. So I think that the answer to your question is that it had no real effect. And frankly, the notion that not picking a Jewish governor or having what is described here as a schizophrenic policy toward Israel is going to change the Jewish vote is not true. The Palestinians are railing against the administration. They're railing against the administration for being too pro-Israel. So how do you consistently argue that the Palestinians are right, that the administration is too pro-Israel, and yet they should lose the Jewish vote? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's interesting that, because so then, Alan, you would agree with all the decisions that have been made in this conflict and how America's policy has been?
Not exactly. I would agree with most of it. And in fact, I'm grateful for most of it. I think that the fact that President Biden went over to Israel shortly after the attack took place was an enormous boost for the country and for its morale. I also think that the Blinken and Biden, and to some extent Harris, have understood that the war doesn't end until Israel's safe and there's no longer a threat of invasion, no more hostages, and no more of a threat of missile attacks, which is on everybody's mind in Israel. They've been realistic about that. I think that to some degree, they've tried to micromanage the war. And I don't understand why the Palestinians complain about that, because every time they've tried to micromanage the war, they've done it in order to make things quieter, to make things quieter and to end it sooner. So I'm not sure what the basis for that criticism is, but I would say that most people in Israel, most people who are Jews in America, I would say close to 80 or 90% of them think that Biden has been extraordinarily fair and reasonable with Israel, and disagrees with Israel only when he thinks Israel might be going too far.
Well, I know Andrew probably has a response to that. So, Alan, Andrew, Autry, stay right there, and we'll get back to you in this conversation right after the break. Because also after the break, we are going to look at how the protest over the war in Gaza could have an effect on who gets elected president of the United States in November. Welcome back to Perspective. I'm your host, Scotty Nell Hughes. Protests, including rallies, demonstrations, campaigns, and vigils relating to the Israel-Hamas war, have occurred nationwide across the United States since the conflict start on October 7th of 2023. Now, the protests that occurred first at Columbia University in New York City are part of a broader phenomenon of the Israel-Hamas war protest all around the world. Now, the protests not only take on an anti-Israel theme, but at times have also taken on an anti-American theme, with flag burnings and anti-U.S. government signs and chants. Now, the protest became a major headline just recently at the Democrat National Convention, where thousands gather daily to voice their dissent, break security boundaries, and even find ways into the convention hall. But what effect are these protests having on the election? Well, I want to continue our discussion with our panel. Alan Grayson, former Florida congressman. Andrew Langer, host of The Andrew Langer Show and president of the Liberty Institute. And Autry J. Pruitt, chairman of New Journey PAC. Andrew, I promised you before we left, you obviously had something to say. We were talking about how the Jewish community viewed the American support, and I want you to obviously address that, but also, is the Jewish community united in its support of Netanyahu and its current military strategy?
Well, listen, again, sort of getting down to it, no, they're not all united behind Netanyahu, and this gets into all kinds of sort of the internal political issues, what the U.S. shouldn't be doing, and this gets into why I called it schizophrenic. Is the U.S. should not, as Netanyahu is the prime minister of Israel, should not be working to undermine his effort. At the same time, by the way, so we are giving aid, right? We're giving lots and lots of money to Israel. At the same time, you have major Democratic leaders not showing up to support Netanyahu when he comes to address a joint session of Congress. Also at the same time that we're giving money to Israel's enemies who can then turn around and use that money to attack Israel, right? That's what I mean when I say schizophrenic policy here, right? The Biden administration, I would say, contributed to the conditions that allowed this attack last October by Hamas and the hostage taking and the massacring of Jewish citizens to occur. At the same time that they're then turning around and doing this. So that's what I mean when I say that it's been a mixed bag. No, the reality is, of course, you know, you are going to see, by and large, support for Israel remain, support for the Democratic Party amongst American Jews remain very, very high. But again, it is all on the margins here when it comes down to it. And I'm talking to folks. I don't know about Congressman Grayson. I mean, he's got possibly a different constituency than the ones that I'm talking to. But there are questions that have been raised in the minds of a lot of traditional Democratic constituents who happen to be Jewish about whether or not they can continue to support the Democratic Party. And let me add to this, right? Of course, you're going to get pro-Palestinians who are going to be criticizing any American administration, because any American administration that gives any support to the state of Israel is going to get criticized by the more radical forms of the Palestinians. It's how much support the Democratic Party gives to those constituencies that is of the main concern.
Well, Autry, I've got to ask you, as you look at some of these protests that are going on, how are the Palestinian protests, do you think, on campuses here in the United States affecting support for the Democrats? Is it helping gain them voters?
I think it's not helping them gain voters because they're already preaching to the choir. They're preaching and doing the protests to their own constituency. In fact, I think in some key areas, I don't know if it's in the swing states per se, but in some of the even more liberal states, New York, when you saw Trump polling, for example, ahead in New York, saw him gaining even some traction in California and in Illinois, I think those protests are actually hurting. And the reason why they're hurting is because some independents are actually thinking back to Black Lives Matter. They don't want a repeat of the burning down of the country that they saw a few summers ago. So I think that these protests can unintentionally have triggered post-traumatic stress disorder or post-traumatic protest disorder.
Well, it's interesting on that one. You know, I've got to look at number, you know, I've got to look at Alan, because could the Gaza war actually be, Alan, do you think this final wedge that could push Jewish voters away from the Democrat Party and into the ranks of the Republican Party? Are you in any way fearful of that, Alan?
No, this is this fantasy that's been going on now for a quarter of a century among rich Republicans that they can tear away the Jewish vote from the Democrats. Does it make any sense to say that because there are Palestinian protesters protesting against a Democratic president and a Democratic vice president, that they're not tough enough on Israel? Therefore, Jews are going to abandon the Democratic Party? Wouldn't you think it would be exactly the opposite, that they would rally around the flag? What we're actually seeing here is something that goes back beyond the JCPOA that you may recall way back into the early 2000s. It's the Jewish strategy among Republicans to try to tear away Jews from the Democratic Party, just as we saw the Southern strategy before that and ever since, to tear away white Southerners from the Democratic Party. It's the same thing. And whatever buttons they feel that they are within their reach, they will try to push.
Hold on.
It's not going to work. It's never going to work. Jews simply can make up their own minds.
Okay, so I'm going to give you both a quick comment about Autry. You first, and I'll end with Andrew. Please.
There's no trying to tear away. We're not talking about Republicans reaching in and tearing away. There is no doubt the data shows it. The Democrat Party's anti-Israel, pro-Hamas rhetoric is pushing some. I'm not even saying 10%, but it's pushing a few people away from the Democratic Party, Alan. I'm not talking about a Southern strategy and some Democrat fantasy. But going back to the 70s, I'm talking about real-time data. It's happening.
Right. Andrew, you got 30 seconds.
Listen, again, it gets back to this. You know, I've heard it from Jews on both sides of the aisle. They ask themselves the question, is it good for the Jews? And there's nothing wrong with asking that question. More and more former Democrats or more and more Democratic Jews are saying, you know something, I can't vote for this craziness anymore.
Okay, but I've got a tag onto that, Andrew, and help me out on this side of it. What is it going to take then? Does Republicans, just like they've had to kind of give up the thought of votes for women and recruiting women and other minorities ever, what is it going to take for the Republican Party to ever be able to attract the Jewish vote over to their side?
I think we're seeing it right now. It's a schizophrenic policy which aids and rewards the enemies of the Jewish state. At the sacrifice of the Jewish state. And then also there are all the other sort of ancillary issues that are causing voters to reconsider their support for the Democratic Party. And again, I'm hearing this from progressive Jews and centrist Jews, you know, right and left.
Okay, so Alan, I've got to ask
you. To put it shortly,
oh, Autry,
time.
Yes.
Autry? No, time.
Right.
It takes time. The more and more Harris pushes the left-wing progressive anti-Israel pro-terrorist position, time will push them away. It's time.
Well, what about actually putting Jewish people into office, Alan? Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like of all the minorities that have not been represented, the Jewish population for being here has had very few actually run for office. We had Lieberman, and I think we just recently, we had what is it going to take for more Jewish Democrats to put their name on the ballot? Could that also be how you're able to keep that support behind your party?
Well, first of all, I just want to say before I answer your question that there is no anti-Jewish policy within the Democratic Party, period. It's just something that's been conjured up here in this panel and for the partisan purpose of the Republican Party.
Rhetoric. Alan, I said rhetoric.
But I don't even know what that means. But let me answer your question. There have been fewer than 100 presidents and vice presidents in the history of the United States. The fact that Jews are only a tiny, tiny fraction of the population is all the explanation you need from that. From my state in Florida, there was a Jewish senator in the 1850s. Jews are slightly overrepresented in the House of Representatives, substantially overrepresented in the U.S. Senate. It's not that we are left out. I don't think anybody can make a case for that. Yes, would be nice to have a Jewish president, just like it's been nice to have an African-American president, just like it's going to be really nice to have a woman president. All of that is true. But I don't think that we've been left out.
And I said, well, let me just remind you, Barry Goldwater actually was the first person of Jewish faith who ran for president on the Republican side. So both sides have only had a few at there to list. I want to thank you, Alan Grayson, Ava Autry, and Andrew Langer. Thank you so much for joining us.
you for having me.
Thank you so much for having me on board.
Thank you. Okay, so to my point, we can talk about the lack of diversity in skin color and gender of those who have been elected to the highest office in the land. I find it interesting the religious heritage of an individual is not nearly as appealing of a campaign motivator. Almost all presidents and vice presidents have been members of the Christian Protestant Church, with only two members of the Catholic Church ever even being elected. Even atheists have been elected as presidents over those of the other faiths. I guess this is what happens when you have a country that was founded to escape government-sponsored religion. Yet as we continue to find reasons here in the United States that divide us politically, I would hope the consistent values found in almost all religions would always be used to unite us rather than weaponized to divide. But hey, that's just my perspective. I'm Scottie Nell Hughes. Thanks for watching.